This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, hockey fans, and welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. I'm your host, Edward Fraser, this week here with Ryan Kennedy and Ken Campbell. Matt Larkin is away on vacation. And gentlemen, I want to change things up a little bit and start with a reader question this week. And the reader question comes from an E. Fraser from Toronto, Ontario.
First time caller, long time listener.
He asks, does Matt Larkin deserve a vacation?
Oh. Wow. He works hard, but he doesn't work well. So really, like, he has to work really hard because he's not very effective.
It's like a skating mechanic.
He's like a fourth line center who's got to work hard.
He's
got to
expend twice
the
amount of energy.
Yeah.
For a second there, I thought you were going to actually be nice and not lay a burn on the guy.
No,
but instead,
never.
I mean, Larkin burn.
Never.
I'll say the man deserves a vacation.
Oh, absolutely, he does. He's a very hard worker. Knows a lot about the game. Might have the greatest beard in the world.
No!
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Absolutely not. Okay, let's get serious and let's get into it. The St. Louis Blues. We had counted them out.
We did.
They were done.
Like dinner.
They were absolutely... Oh, Jake Allen can't win, but who needs them?
Right.
They've won five straight, back in wild card position. You and I were talking before the show, desperate after last night's Jets Preds game to see that series. Suddenly the Blues might throw a wrench into that. How seriously should we be taking the St. Louis Blues?
Oh, I think we should be taking them really seriously. I mean, you know, out of those five games, one of them was against Boston, the other was against Columbus, who hadn't lost in 10 games. And I think it basically comes down to what you just mentioned, Edward. Jake Allen. Yeah. As Jake Allen goes, so go the St. Louis Blues. I mean, his season has been their season.
Yeah.
You know, his season has been their season. You know, he was lousy, they were lousy. You know, Carter Hutton goes down with that ankle thing or whatever it is that he has. Jake Allen's 7-2 since then with like a .927 save percentage. You know, I mean, has won back-to-back games twice and looks to be the Jake Allen that is Jake Allen when he's good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think as long as this lasts, and it could be a while, the St. Louis Blues are going to be dangerous.
It's happening at the right time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the wild thing is, this is like the second straight year they've traded one of their biggest players at the deadline.
Yeah.
First Kevin Shattenkirk, now Paul Stastny. And we figured like, oh, okay, the Blues are packing it in. It's like, yeah, you know, we got one more kick of the can here.
Yeah.
You look at the lineup and they still have a ton of good players. That's
they
the
do,
thing. And
do.
I mean,
really,
you know, Carl Gunnarsson's hurt and, you know, Robbie Fabry's been hurt all year, but Braden Shen, Vladimir Tarasenko, Alex Steen is on fire right now. And they still got a pretty solid back end with Petrangelo and Parayko. And they've got that great farm system where you have a lot of those AHL tweeners right now. And they're young kids, so they're not going to be tweeners for much longer. But they can keep replenishing and they can keep everybody fresh because they can insert guys in and out of the lineup. And you look at the West and I think, you know, like Nashville and Winnipeg, those are the two teams that on paper you say those are the contenders. There's really not anybody else. But you look at the Blues and I don't know. I mean, they're pretty deep. And if Jake Allen's hot, then what do you need if you're the St. Louis Blues at this point? You pretty much have everything.
Right, right. And I mean, Jake Allen, I think, is 11-2 and was 11-2-2 down the stretch last year. And this year he's now 7-2 and maybe 11-2-2 again down the stretch.
Yeah.
You know?
The Central Division is no doubt the best division in hockey.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's going
to
be extremely tough to get out of that division. And that's part of the reason why, I mean, at this point I think we can announce that we picked the Preds to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, you talked to a ton of people for our playoff preview, which will be out probably late next week, mid this week. You know, we were basically sawed off between Tampa and Nashville. And so we went outside and talked to Ryan. You talked to a ton of people. And surprisingly, you know, for how well Tampa's played this year, it was a bit of a landslide for Nashville.
Yeah, but Tampa hasn't been that good lately.
They have not, and Vasilevsky's been really, really struggling.
They might not even win their division now.
At the time we were at the time we were talking about
it,
early for publication purposes, and they're still a heck of a hockey club. And when you get to the playoffs, you press the reset button.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows what happens. But that's the problem with me with Nashville, is you've got to get past Winnipeg, which, as they saw last night, is no easy feat, and now you got to get through St. Louis as well.
Yep.
That is a tough road.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at playoff predictions, the reason it is so difficult is with Nashville, as you mentioned, Winnipeg in particular, and now St. Louis Rising, but like, and even with Tampa, they got to get past Boston and or Toronto, and then possibly Pittsburgh. Like, there's no easy road for anybody in either conference. So all you can do when you're making these predictions is say, you know, if everything goes according to best case scenarios for teams, who has the highest upside and who stacks up the best against sort of any opponent. And with Nashville, you know, we looked at them head to head with Tampa Bay. And, you know, Nashville's defense, you know, coaching, special teams, all of that came out on top of Tampa Bay. Having said that, Tampa Bay is very good. It's almost because they play a bit of a looser structure, what makes them great might also be their downfall. And, you know, we'll just have to see how it goes in the playoffs. Because if they can't keep up with Toronto in a speed series, that'll be a problem. If they play too loose against a great structured team like Boston, then they could have a problem. But they also have Kucherov and Stamkos and Point and Palat and Hedman.
Well,
so they might be fine.
I mean, it's harder to score your way out of trouble in the playoffs.
True.
And when you talk about the playoffs, that's why I would probably right now, I wouldn't mind being the Los Angeles Kings or the San Jose Sharks. Because, you know, you think about it, they might be in the best position to make a run, right?
Sure.
Put Vegas in that pile, too.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But Vegas is in that pile. But if the playoffs were to start today, Colorado would play Vegas in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
That could happen.
Totally.
Colorado could be Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Vegas, as good as they've been, is still a wild card. Because, I mean, let's not kid ourselves, they've overachieved.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, not saying they're not a great team, and Gerard Gallant deserves all the credit in the world. He's a shoo-in for the Jack Adams, but, you know, that's a wild card team because you don't know what's going to happen when the playoffs ultimately.
Well, I mean, they've done, but then you turn it, you can flip that and say, look, they've done it for 8 months. Why can't they do it for another three? Right?
Because LA's done it for 8 years, and San Jose has did it recently. That's the difference there to me. The Norris Trophy, I can't remember a race in recent years that has been this close. There are 4, 5, 6 guys all with a legitimate claim to this trophy. Few games left to be played.
Yeah.
Somebody could really kind of jump out. But right now, Kenny, who's your pick for the Norris Trophy?
Well, it's funny because, like, nobody's pulling away with it, right? And you know, you have the best defenseman in the league who's not having a year that the best defenseman in the league should have. Sure. I mean, Erik Karlsson, although he's come on pretty well lately.
Sure.
And I mean, he's overcome a lot, obviously, with, you know, personally and in terms of injury. But I don't think he's, you know, he's really in the mix this time. To me, it comes down to either, you know, probably Victor Hedman or Drew Doughty. Both of them have exactly the same number of points right now. I think 59 points. Hedman, I think, you know, I mean, he's got good numbers. He's playing against, you know, top competition all the time. And that team is not a good defensive team. Like, they are a very loosey-goosey defensive team.
Yeah.
And he's still got very good possession numbers, pretty solid defensive-type numbers on a team that doesn't pay a lot of attention to defense. So I think sort of with all things being equal, I think that kind of tilts it in his favor. But you know, I mean, I wouldn't be outraged if Drew Doughty wouldn't want it. I wouldn't be outraged if Alex Pietrangelo won it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I'm not sure if you can give it to Brent Burns again. I'm not sure if you can give it to a guy who's minus 15. I know it's, you know, I know that plus minus is a very flawed stat, but I'm not sure you can give it to a guy who's
minus 15. It looks
weird. Yeah. And I mean, he does a lot of his damage on the power play. But yeah, I mean, for me, I think it would be Hedman right now.
Yeah, and I think Hedman would certainly be a front runner. And it's funny because people do mention this on Twitter that the Norris is the one trophy where it kind of seems sometimes guys get it because it's their turn. And Hedman does not have a Norris yet. So
right.
Because he is definitely worthwhile and he doesn't have one, you might see a couple more Hedman votes if it's sort of a tie goes to the runner scenario there.
Mm-hmm.
But Drew Doughty, even though he does have a Norris trophy, he would also be a great candidate as well. Another name I'll toss out there is John Carlson with Washington.
Yeah.
Also plays against good competition, has more points than Hedman.
Everybody.
And, you know, you look at how Washington plays, and, I mean, they have some pretty decent shutdown guys. Like, he's not the only defenseman back there, obviously, but he's having a great season. And when we think about the Caps, obviously, you think about Ovechkin, and you think about all the great forwards, and then Holtby and Nett. But, I mean, John Carlson, he plays really good minutes, and I feel he's kind of like the sleeper pick there, where if you look at things and be like, man, John Carlson's having a pretty good year, and he's a UFA this summer.
He's really helping himself. But to me, he's a guy who's really matured, I think, into a real kind of really good kind of aware defenseman who, you know, before he kind of played a little bit like a cowboy, you know, and now I think he's a little more, you know, he's a little more aware of where he has to be and what he has to do to help the Capitals win. So I could live with that for sure.
It's funny. I think PK Subban deserves to be in the conversation, but gets punished because he's on the league's best defense.
Right.
So they kind of steal votes from.
And Roman Yossi.
Yeah. I mean, like that's like. I mean, he's. I was thinking about him this morning. I was thinking about Yossi this morning.
Yeah.
And again, Subban will be in the top five, I would think.
Oh, well, yeah. I think he'll be, but he's not going to win.
He'll be a finalist.
It's funny, they've got two number one defensemen, and I don't think either of those guys are their best defensemen.
Right.
How much does Carlson get this summer?
John Carlson? I mean, you have to think at least seven, right?
Time seven.
Yeah.
Seven,
I mean, you it's very hard to find elite defensemen who have well-rounded games. And he's not
Toronto,
that old.
If it's Toronto, it might be eight. Like, they may just really go all in on a guy like that.
Yeah.
And
once the numbers get that goofy, who knows, right?
Yeah.
All it takes is one or two teams.
You're obviously very happy if you're Brian McClellan that he's having a good season because he's helping your hockey club. But at the same time, you're chewing a hole through your cheek because you're realizing there's no way you're getting this guy back because you can't fit. You just got too much on your books already.
Unless you tell them, look, I mean, we're part of something, you know, there's something good going on here, and you take the hometown discount, we give you 8 years. See, that's the thing, right? They're the only team that can give them 8 years.
Mm.
So they can go a little lower on the AAV than teams that can only give them 7 years.
Their big problem is they still don't have Tom Wilson signed.
Right.
And they have some other contracts coming up in the next couple of years, and they're already so top-heavy. It just feels like, I know Brian McClellan has said, you know, he'll see what he can do with John Carlson, but I think, you know, this is Carlson's year to, like, really cash in.
Yeah.
Like, John Carlson's grandkids don't have to work based off this summer.
He's 28 years old. This is the chance to get a huge deal.
And
he can be effective through the 7 years that you give this guy. So he'll deserve that kind of payout. You know, he's not 32.
Yeah.
You're not paying him and then having him sitting on your third pair for the final 2 years of the deal. He's going to deserve the big deal. So, yeah, I don't think eight or seven is unreasonable for a guy who is leading the league in points.
They better be hoping the cap goes up by a lot. Like, they've already got 63.
Nah, it's I think the Capitals are well aware that this is the last year John Carlson is going to play in a Capitals uniform. It's funny. I want to talk a bit more about Washington actually, because they still perplex me because we don't talk about them as a cup contender. Even though they're leading the Metro,
Ed, they're losers. They're losers. That's what they do. They lose. I said this last week.
Okay.
That's why they're going to lose this year. You know why they're going to lose this year, Ed?
Are they losers?
Because they're losers.
Okay, but just be aware that they are taking their team photo this Thursday, March 29th at Capital One Arena. I just got that.
Oh, good.
I just got that press release.
Excellent.
So.
And in years when they've taken their team photo at Capital One Arena on March, whatever,
next level analytics.
Yeah, yeah.
The Canadian Women's Hockey League and the National Women's Hockey League held their championships this weekend. Great. I didn't watch the National Women's Hockey League, the NWHL final, but I did watch the Canadian Women's Hockey League final. What a great game.
It was a good game. It was a really good game. Yeah, very competitive, two evenly matched teams.
Yeah. Kunlun and Markham. Kenny, you were there.
Yeah.
Markham wins in overtime, beats Kunlun, which is the Las Vegas of the... One of two Chinese expansion teams in the Canadian Women's Hockey League.
Yeah.
Feels a little bit like...
They have three countries in that league.
Yeah.
They got a team from Boston, two from China, and four from Canada.
Feels a little bit like when the CFL expanded to Las Vegas, but anyways, we'll leave it.
Well, at one point, the International Hockey League had all American teams, and the American Hockey League had American and Canadian teams.
Right, right.
So, there you go.
I also like that there's American teams in the Ontario League, but the American League has Ontario.
Which is it?
Mind blown.
What's next for the women's game? There's a lot of question marks around both leagues. What's next?
See, it feels like these leagues are kind of like the CFL. You go in, like the CFL, every year they go into the Grey Cup and it's like, okay, is this league going to exist next year? You know, because there was a time in the 80s and 90s when that really was a question, and I sat there watching the game yesterday and going, okay, is this going to be the last Clarkson Cup? I have no idea whether it's going to be or not. You know, there's a lot of chatter, and I mean, I think Gary Bettman really threw a lot of fuel onto this when he said, look, we want to be involved in women's hockey, but we don't want to be involved when there's two leagues. Mm. We want there to be one league. I think what everybody conveniently forgets is that until 4 years ago, there was only one league, and the NHL had absolutely no interest in women's hockey.
Right.
So I find this all a bit dubious at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I actually wrote a blog today for THN.com saying, you know, like, watch what you wish for when you get I'm not going to say, when you forge a relationship with the NHL.
Right.
Because, I mean, the NHL does a lot of goofy things. And I'm not sure that... I don't know for a fact that it would be the best thing for women's hockey. There are people who know a lot more about this that think it's a no-brainer, that the two leagues should merge and that they should get involved with the NHL. I don't know. I mean, okay, so if the two leagues merge, is that going to make... Like, are there going to be any more women hockey fans because two leagues have merged together? I don't know. I mean, I think right now it's going to be status quo for a while. I think these two leagues are going to go into next year looking very much the way they do this year. And this is going to be a sort of a long-term game, I think.
I don't disagree that will be the case next year, but I don't think becoming partners with the NHL is a bad thing. Mm. You know, yes, okay, the NHL does some goofy things, and fair enough, but they're the biggest game in town.
Yeah.
And they still have a lot to offer.
Yeah, they do.
In terms of promotion and money and backing.
Yeah, that's definitely helps.
But and you know what? If they would give women's hockey $10 million and say, here, we're going to prop up your league, but we're not going to get involved, that would be the best case scenario. Because so what happens? So like, see, but I've posed a couple things. What happens in 3 years down the road if the NHL goes, this really didn't work for us? This isn't great. So we're just going to pull
the pin. So they change again.
We're just going to pull the pin, and now they're back to nothing.
There's been
now one they're back to nothing. You know, what if the NHL says, okay, we own the contracts of the Women's League now. Maybe we'll leverage them against the Olympics, you know? Maybe we'll say, maybe we'll leverage women's hockey against the Olympics to get a better deal for the men. Or, you know, and to me, it just kind of, it reeks of them, you know, patting the little girls on the head and saying, okay, you damsels in distress, the white knight has shown up. You know, thanks for all your hard work, girls, but, you know, let the rich old white guys take it over from here. I don't know. I think it's an idea worth exploring, and I think they should look into it and they should talk about it, and there should be some parameters, and I think that it would be good, but I think people have to watch what they wish for sometimes.
Yeah. I think it's worth the risk. I think it's... I don't think you would be... I mean, if in 3 years the NHL pulls the plug, fine. You're not any farther ahead, but you're not any farther behind, are you?
No, and I think the key is that what the NHL can offer is exposure and infrastructure which I think these leagues definitely need, just in terms of, you know, like human resources for that matter, staffing. You have people that have worked at the NHL that played women's hockey. They're well aware of the, you know, the machinations of it. And you know, they've looked at these leagues in the past, and I think things are getting into a better place now. And obviously, you know, we're seeing the fact that you can have two leagues. There's more talent now than there ever has been, more high-end talent in the women's game, and that's because the game itself is growing, which is a great thing. But I think you know, if you align yourself with the NHL, you get more opportunities. For example, at All-Star Weekend in Tampa this year, you had a couple of women's players come out and demonstrate the skills competition. Yeah. That was cool. But, I mean, maybe in the future we see more than that. Maybe they're actually part of some of those skills competitions where their results go up against the NHLers, yeah. And then you get some fun stuff going on there where, you know, if somebody wins, then, you know, money goes to X charity or whatever, and you get this kind of fun rivalry. The NBA and the WNBA did that in the past where they had, you know, like 3-on-3 games where you would have, like, an NBA player, a WNBA player from the same city, because all those franchises are aligned, and I think they had either a retired player or a celebrity or whatever, and they did like a little 3-on-3 thing. Mm-hmm.
They took a part in the skills competition too.
Yeah, exactly, and they were in the skills competition. So you can work that all in, and that's great because we know that the All-Star Game gets eyeballs, and it gets a lot of corporate eyeballs, and I think that's where the NHL can really help the women's game. Is, like you said, like maybe the NHL loses interest at some point, but maybe these companies are already so entrenched with their relationships with the women's game where they say, well, you know what, you're not with the NHL anymore, but we still like your product, we still like the game, we want to support it. That relationship has already been forged.
I'm going to take an optimistic view, which, if anybody knows what? Me,
yeah.
is...
What's
is,
the catch?
Is yeah. damn near flabbergasting. I think the NHL sees growth potential here. I don't think that this is they're throwing them a bone. I think that they see that there is some money to be made in this. Maybe not now.
But see, but to me, that's where the danger is. That's where the danger is. If they see money to be made, that's, to me, that's where the danger is. Because then if that money's not there, then they pull the pin. And now you're, and I don't agree that you're further ahead. If you've got to start from scratch all over again because the NHL just scorches your entire business plan and your entire landscape, that's not a good thing.
Right.
So I don't think it's a good thing if the NHL goes into it thinking they can make money. If the NHL goes into it with some
altruism?
I had a hard time getting the word out of my mouth because it was so, I don't think I've ever said NHL and altruism in the same sentence.
Yeah, yeah.
But if they do go into it with that kind of attitude, then maybe there's a chance. And maybe they think, yeah, okay, if we grow this thing to a point where, you know, we can make some revenues off of it, great. But I think that going into it with them thinking that they can make money off of it, I think that would be the most dangerous thing.
The NHL is desperate to tap into the Chinese market. The CWHL is already there.
Correct.
I'm going to leave it with that. Blake Wheeler, Ben Chiarot have a little tete-a-tete at practice.
Yep.
Nobody seems bothered by it.
They seem happy.
Your captain is fighting at practice.
Yeah.
Am I insane?
You're insane, but you're right about
this.
But
you're also right.
You're also right about this. Yeah.
Broken clock.
Yeah.
twice a day.
Yeah, blind squirrel.
I just don't get it. I mean, I'm interested to have this discussion because, Kenny, you're pretty staunchly anti-fighting. Ryan, you land on the other side of the coin. But I mean, well, let me start with Ryan because, okay, you like fighting.
Yeah.
Do you like this?
No, it seems like a horrible idea to me. And, you know, Paul Maurice came out after and said, you know, he liked the intensity. And you know, coaches say this all the time. They don't mind fights in practice. But it's like, dude, like Blake Wheeler is a borderline Hart Trophy candidate.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he'll even get some Selke votes.
Sure.
And he's fighting Ben Chiarot. Like, you already had Patrick Laine with a close call on that shot block. You guys have a legit shot at, like, maybe even the Stanley Cup final. Let's face it. I mean,
maybe even the whole thing.
Maybe even the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, I get it that it's like, yeah, you want guys like dialed in, but you have to have a little bit of.
We're talking about like, practice.
Practice? Yeah, not a game.
Yeah.
Not a game.
Yeah.
practice.
Not in practice. Yeah, because, I mean, what if Blake Wheeler gets his orbital bone broken
exactly.
by accident? What if he just, like, trips on Ben Chiarot and breaks his ankle? Like, is it worth it? I feel like you need to compartmentalize where the same reason that these guys don't punch random strangers in the street, but they can punch opponents on the, you know, the hockey rink. You have to be able to, like, separate those two. And it's fine to be intense in practice, but it's like, save it for the other team.
Yeah, we're talking please, about hockey points.
Please,
here, right?
Yeah. Please tell me.
Okay,
please tell me we're living in the upside down and you like it.
Yeah,
I want to hear.
Yeah, really.
No, I hate it. I don't care that much. I'm not as much anti-fighting as I am anti-stupid. And this is stupid.
Okay.
Like, okay. So, like, I could just see whoever the defensive line coach for the New England Patriots in practice, you know, the Friday before
Matt Patricia,
a game.
Who is now the head coach of the Detroit Lions.
But okay, anyway, him.
Yeah.
Him. Anyways, I could just see him saying, okay, hey, buddy, you left tackle there. On this rep, I want you to go in and drill Tom Brady as hard as you can.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to see
go
how
high.
He takes it.
Go high,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. See what happens. Yeah. Like it's ridiculous, but these...
It's a culture.
People are going to hate me. People are going to hate me. They always do.
They already
so what
do.
The
Don't
hell?
Worry about
and
it.
You're, you know what? But again, with the altruism, you came out with the word before I could. It's all part of this ridiculous backwards hockey culture. I mean, people seem to think it's great that Patrick Laine blocks shots. Okay. Number one. If I'm the coach, I don't want him blocking shots.
Go, you go
score
a goal.
No.
Yeah.
Adam Lowry, you block the
shots. Right,
right. Okay? You block the shots. Matt Hendricks, you block the shots.
Yeah.
You know, Patrick Laine, because I need you at the other end to score goals.
Yeah. Yeah. You're pretty good at it.
And also, I mean, okay, that's fine. If you are going to block shots, though, maybe you should learn how to do it. Maybe you should learn how to do it so you don't get hurt.
Yeah.
But anyways, I think it's just all part of this silly hockey culture where people seem to think there's just black and white, and if you don't fight in practice, you're a ringette player or
right.
whatever, you know? Like, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, if, you know, what if... What
you're
if,
too close. You're too
know,
close to the playoffs.
What if Chariot just, you know, takes a wild swing and cracks his orbital bone? You know, like, what if?
I just don't understand the reasoning of intensity. You don't mind seeing that intensity. What? Why do you need to find intensity against each other in practice?
Or if you want to show intensity, skate around the ice 500 times fast. Like, whatever.
Right.
Like, you know,
like. It's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
You know, if it's two fourth liners, fine.
I guess.
Mm.
I guess.
Yeah.
But he's your captain. I mean, you know, the Brady thing's a good analogy.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Blake Wheeler is...
Tom, you just run through the middle and we're just going to dummy you.
Yeah.
While
just
you,
keep
you know,
your head
yeah.
down.
Yeah.
It'll be fine.
How'd you like to suit up at running back for a couple plays?
Yeah.
Let's move on to some reader questions. The first one, Boston Bruins, and it's a good one. It's from... Puck Nerd Hockey via Twitter. Who the heck dropped out of the lineup for the Bruins when they're all healthy? And how does the lineup take shape for guys who are lucky enough to stay dressed? The Bruins are a deep and good club.
Boy, yeah, they really are. They really are. And I mean, right now, well, Patrice Bergeron played yesterday finally.
Yes, he did.
After missing 13 games, whatever. And like he just came in and they were like the best line in the NHL again.
Yeah.
And Marchand scores in overtime, his fifth overtime goal, blah, blah, blah. It's ridiculous. And that's why I think the Tampa Bay Lightning may actually end up playing the Toronto Maple Leafs in round one. Because I think Boston may win that division. But right now, I mean, they've got Nash, McAvoy, DeBrusk, Chara, and Backes, basically, that are still out of the lineup. So, I mean, if I'm Brian Gionta and Tommy Wingles right now, I'm thinking maybe my spot isn't so secure.
Yeah.
If I'm Neil Achiari, you know, Sean Kareli, those guys, I would be thinking I'm going to get knocked down a peg into the press box at some point. I would think, you know, that, you know, once Rick Nash comes back, I mean, they got him for a reason, right? So he's got to be right up there. I would assume McAvoy and Chara just... would be back together as a pair, and
totally.
Nick Holden probably comes out, and then you've got, maybe you go with seven defensemen. I don't know. I mean, but it's a great problem to have.
Well, that's the thing is, as you've named all these guys, I think, oh, he's playing well. Oh, he's playing well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he's playing well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the scary part. And you need depth in the playoff because you're going to get injuries.
Yeah.
And that's what makes Boston so much more scary to me. Mm. Beyond Tuukka Rask being out of his mind good.
Like, what do you do with Matt Grzelczyk? I mean, he's playing really well.
Yeah.
You know, Brandon Carlo. These guys are playing really well.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I think the one sort of saving grace, if you will, is that you have guys like Ryan Donato and Dan Heinen where... particularly with Ryan Donato, who just came out of college, this is all kind of like bonus time for him. Like being up in the NHL, seeing what it's all like. Really, like those guys are—they're probably going to be black aces in the playoffs. But it's great because
you think Ryan Donato will be.
Well, I mean, like how many forwards can they play?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if he earns that spot, then that's awesome, and they get a guy with a lot of high end skill. But
then it's like, hey, David Backes, I know you're like. This big veteran who's played a thousand bazillion games, and
you might
be able to really help us in the playoffs, but we're just going to need you to kind of sit around.
But this kid's hands,
are
silky.
Yeah.
Sorry, but for guys like that, like you know, they're going to be a big part of the Bruins in the next couple of years. But I mean, like we said, like there's just so many veterans there and so many good players. You're not going to touch that top line, obviously. I think the only sort of workmanlike players that might survive is you're going to need some penalty killers at the bottom just to fill things out. So, you know, like a Tim Schaller, for example, he probably hangs on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's great experience for the Donatos and the Heinens of the world where they can, like, get in some games now and they're there if they need them in the playoffs. But otherwise, they are getting just awesome experience, just soaking it all in. And then you go to training camp next year and you're that much more comfortable, a la Charlie McAvoy last year after he had that little playoff run with them.
While we're talking about the Bruins, I would like to extend a formal apology to Mr. Ken Campbell. Brad Marchand, I'm ready to say, best player in the Bruins.
Oh.
5 overtime goals this year.
Yeah.
He's really good.
I like guys who score goals.
I know.
Yeah.
Patrice Bergeron is a heck of a hockey player, too.
But also good.
He's okay.
Also
he's okay.
It's all right.
Aku Lindberg asks via email, when will an NHL team hire a European coach?
Okay, say what the guy also said in his question.
Didn't he say
something about...
He said something to the effect of that he's thankful that the podcast can get him through his Tuesdays.
Yeah, he says, well, I take the train to my crappy job or something.
Boring job.
Well, boring job, yeah.
Poor guy. What if his boss is listening? That's why I was trying to...
Yeah.
Anyways.
Well, yeah,
I'm sure there's lots of...
the boss of some guy in Sweden is going to be listening to the podcast? Maybe.
I hope so.
Who knows? There are people everywhere.
Worldwide.
Anyways, in answer to your question, Aki, is it?
Aku.
And to answer your question, Aku, it's already happened. I mean, Alpo Suonen was coach of the Winnipeg Jets. Ivan Hlinka was coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins for a short time.
Yeah.
Coached 1 year, and then the next year they went 0-4, and it was like, okay, you're out.
Yeah.
Ralph Kruger.
But it's been a while.
Ralph Kruger's not a European, though.
No.
He speaks German and everything. It would be
he's not European.
Tempting to... Yeah. Say that he's a European because he's been over there for so long.
And he
speaks all those languages.
I do apologize.
But in any event, there's those have been the only two. So it's been a long, long time. There are some assistant coaches that are European. Tommy Abelin's been an assistant coach. Ulf Samuelsson's been an assistant coach. I think maybe even Kjell Samuelsson's been an assistant coach. But anyway, so there have been a few. But I mean, you look at it's an interesting dynamic. Like you look at. There's one European GM in the NHL, in Jarmo Kekalainen. And when he needed a coach, who did he hire?
John Tortorella.
Like the most North American guy you could ever think of in your life, right?
Yeah.
So there's still a ways to go on that because you would have thought that maybe this guy might go out of the box a little bit. I think there's some good candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, I think, obviously, is Marco Sturm. Who coached Team Germany to almost a gold medal in the Olympics. You know, he's done wonders with that program. I think he's a guy, you know, and I mean, there's almost an asterisk beside him because he's not, you know, I mean, he played here. He'd speak the language. He would be able to come in and, being able to embrace the culture of the NHL.
He's less European. He's less European than Ralph Kruger.
Yeah, he is. He actually is. Yeah. Cool. But you know, there's you know, Lauri Marimäki in Finland is a good one. And I think part of the situation with European coaches is you know, they're coaching in the NHL. You know, a lot of guys they'll you know, a guy will come out of the NHL, have a really good career, and coach in the East Coast League. Right, and then he moves up to the American League. Then he's an assistant. Then he's in. I'm not sure that the Europeans see that as being a path to
right.
coaching, because they've, you know, they've got good jobs in Europe where they get paid well, and they probably have a lot more job security in a lot of cases. And so, you know, but I do know that, you know, I think part of it is a bias. I think part of it is
sure.
a bias. I think there have been, you know, there have been guys that have wanted to come over here and just haven't had the opportunity.
Yeah. For me, a really good candidate would be Rickard Granborg.
Absolutely.
From Sweden. He's coached the international team at various levels for years now. But what I think gives him a bit of an edge is that he played college hockey at St. Cloud State. So he knows the North American game. He also coached over here.
He's been here for like, he's been in North America for like 10 years. Or
he was,
years.
Yeah. So he did some coaching at St. Cloud. He coached with the Spokane Chiefs of the WHL for a year as an assistant. So he's done that path where he's coached in junior, coached in college. Yes, it was a long time ago, but he's had those experiences, and you know, because he played over here, I think he has more of a sense of, you know, what is expected, but also great international resume where he has 2 world championship gold medals. He has a world junior gold medal. He has bunch of silver and bronzes as well from international competition. So I think he would be a pretty good option. Another coach that always impressed me, who's with Frölunda, if I'm not mistaken, is Roger Rönnberg, who also coached the Swedish junior team for a couple of years. Just a really progressive guy. And if you were looking to go outside the box and pick somebody that you thought could make a difference and bring some new ideas to the table, I think Rönnberg would be another good option.
Via Twitter, Frederick Borg is asking, how much of an impact will Ili Tolvanen really have on the Preds' playoff run? And his 2 cents is, he can't see him adapt to the NHL that quickly. Ryan, you're our prospect expert. You've been watching Tolvanen quite intently this entire year with expectation of a potential move. How much of an impact can he make?
Well, I think he could be pretty good for the Preds, and I think it's because it will be short-term. I was actually talking to a couple of scouts about this the other week, and they are pointing out that when Tolvanen joins the Predators, which could be any day now, he's going to jump into this thing, and basically there's going to be almost like a great naivete about him, where it's like, you don't know what to expect, kid. Just go out there, do your thing. He's probably going to be looser now than he will be next year when he's at his first real training camp. Going for a spot. Again, going back to Charlie McAvoy, when he came to the Bruins were like, just do your thing, Charlie. If you like to rush the puck, rush the puck. We'll have somebody else take care of the back end, i.e. Zdeno Chara, who happens to be really good at that. So when you're Ili Tolvanen, your big thing is that you have a fantastic NHL caliber release on your shot. You are a goal scorer. The Preds, they know defense. They can take care of that. For him, it's like, we're going to post you up around the circle. Work your magic. See what you can do. And for Tolvanen, all he has to do is go out there. It's going to be fun. He's going to be living in a hotel, or maybe somebody will take him into their home for, you know, a week or two. This is his first NHL experience. There's going to be a ton of Preds fans outside the arena every time. There's probably going to be concerts. For him, he can just go out and have fun. I think that we'll see potentially some really nice numbers for him in the short term. And then next year, we reset expectations once other teams sort of put in their scouting report on him. They start checking him differently. And Nashville's obviously, you know, just playing a regular 82-game schedule versus playoffs when everything is just, like, crazy and, like, all over the place and fun.
It's interesting because, I mean, the problem is that the Preds are so deep, right? So he may not get a really good chance to make a mark because the Predators are so deep. And so, like, I mean, he's very dynamic. What, the highest scoring teenager in KHL history or something? Obviously, offensively very gifted. You look at the right side on the Predators, and he's, like, I don't know if he could play the third or the fourth line. the way he plays. And their top two right wingers are Victor Arvidsson and Craig Smith. So where does he fit in there? That's the only thing. You know, maybe you bring him in and you put him right on the top line right away to start and see what he does. And then maybe, you know, maybe that Arvidsson and Smith move down a peg and, you know, Fischer moves to the left side and maybe Salamaki comes out of the line. I don't know. Whatever. I mean, but you know, I mean, it's a good, another really good problem to have. But, you know, I mean, I think it's important when you bring a young guy in like this, you don't put him in a spot where he's going to have his confidence ruined.
Totally.
So put him in a spot where he can succeed. So put him right on the top line, you know, with Fjell and Johansson, I guess, or, you know, whatever their first line is right now, and see what he can do.
I think the one thing that concerned us slightly and some of the people you talked to about the Predators was that they maybe don't have the most potent offense, or at least compared to Tampa Bay, who we were kind of just matching them up head to head. You know, their offense isn't at that level. And with no disrespect meant to Philip Forsberg, they don't really have a true game breaker. Tolvanen brings that potential to the Predators. And that's why I don't think it's out of this world to throw him on that top line. I want to see in the regular season first.
Sure.
You don't experiment come playoff time.
Yeah.
But he brings an element to this team that they might be lacking just a little bit. Not that they can't score, but they're doing it.
They're seventh in NHL score.
I know, right? But you know, it's just, it's a more of a committee for them. Right. You know, this is a game breaker type of guy.
Yeah, and their defense helps a lot. I mean, I think Philip Forsberg is pretty good up there, but I think what you could do with Tolvanen is toss him out on the power play.
Sure.
You know, even if he's not getting a ton of minutes on a regular shift, toss him out on the power play. Goalies aren't going to know what to expect from him right now. And he has a very quick and deceptive release. So you could, again, in the short term, you could really make some hay having Tolvanen out there and just catching teams off guard.
I had one of my many brain cramps just a minute ago. I said Fiala and Johansson. Obviously, I meant Forsberg and Johansson.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, thanks everybody so much for listening. We'll be back again next week. For Ryan Kennedy and Ken Campbell, I'm Edward Fraser. See you on the other side.